Three words. Vice President Oprah.
Welcome to Random Inspiration, Show 8. This is going to be a slightly bare-bones crew tonight. We just have myself, EJ Hayes, and my co-host number one, Chris Armstrong. What's up, Chris?
Yo. What's going on?
Oh, nothing. Just actually got back from watching Indiana Jones, the new movie.
How was it?
It was... I really liked it. It was... crazy, which is interesting about Indiana Jones, because I guess he kind of takes on interesting, stuff of the era that the story is set in. So if I'm not going to give any details away because I had no clue, but what is it going to be about? So I'm going to not give any clues away because it was kind of opening night. So whoever listens to this won't be a spoiler, and I won't spoil it for you either. But it was definitely interesting, and it was pretty action-packed for being a 66-year-old star.
I actually almost refused to see it.
Why?
Well, have you ever seen Firewall?
No. Well,
in that movie, Harrison Ford plays an IT manager something.
Yeah, I have seen Firewall.
Yeah, and his family's kidnapped, and at the very end, there's a fight scene.
Yeah,
where he takes on the bad guy, and in my opinion, it was like the most ridiculous fight scene I've ever seen.
Did you think he looked old or what?
He did look old. Like, well, the action, and it was just horrible.
It's funny you say that, because he must have gotten in better shape for this movie, because he looked a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, I noticed that too in that last movie. And it's not that way here. So, okay, I mean, well, like, it kind of shows him with his shirt off at one point, and he's, like, got some big guns, you know, for 66. He definitely got into shape for this movie, so you'll be impressed. So, anyway, enough about that.
Okay.
On today's show, we're going to talk about a little article, What If Gas Costs $10 a Gallon? We have some more in our lineup of iPhone killers. We are going to talk about the indie labels combining to form a quote-unquote virtual fifth major label. We're going to talk about the new blog on Traveler Blues. Our fellow podcaster Dave Bond co-writes for. So that's going to be what we're going for today. First up, gasoline. Good grief. Of course, it's getting higher every day. I work in the industry, so I actually have a big flat screen TV on where I work that has the up to 3 second price of gasoline and diesel and heating oil all day long. So I kind of keep my eye on it every day. And so it's definitely been going up, that's no doubt, every day just about. It goes, the trend I've seen is after a weekend, it'll go down on Monday, and then the rest of the week, it'll go up. And that's been doing that for the last 2.5 months, down on Monday from the weekend, and then every day, it'll go up between 5 and 10, sometimes up to 15 cents a day. And
so for your business, do you try and do more business on Monday or more business on Friday?
Well, my business does not fluctuate based on price, thank God, like consumer gasoline does. So if I was selling to a convenience store selling gas, they would try to beat the price. I mean, they're always trying to beat the price. So the days it's going to go up and they know it, they'll order like crazy. And then the days that it's going down, the days that it's going down, so they know the price is going to go down, it's dead. So then everybody's still buying gasoline because they don't know what the price is going to do, and then they got to catch back up. So sometimes, you know, it basically makes it ridiculous. Well, the industry I'm in never stops 24/7, which is the drilling industry. So they pretty much They don't care about price. Yeah, it doesn't matter to them. But we beat the system by knowing what the price is. So if I know that the price is going up 10 cents a gallon, I'll go preload all my trucks. That way I'm selling it tomorrow for a 10 cent higher price than I bought it for. So I just made, you know, whatever 7,000 a load is times 10 cents per gallon. So, you know, you're making that much more profit just by having a little strategy. So it works out really well the way we have it set up. But
nice to have inside information.
Yeah, it is. this article, you said you read it. You didn't read it when it initially came up, but when I pointed out to you again, what were some things that stuck out in this article to you?
Well, first of all, my wife and I took a trip over to Ireland several years ago, and I was noticing the gas prices over there, and they were, you know, the sign said like 3.25 or whatever. It's like, man, your gas is expensive. But then you look closer, and since they're in Europe, they're like on the metric system, and so it's like 3.25 a liter, where ours back then was like in the $2 range a gallon.
How many liters per gallon?
Dude, it's way expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 3 liters a gallon or something like that.
So it was up there close to $10 a gallon.
Yeah, and so theirs was like $10 a gallon then. And, you know, I thought, okay, you know, we could do this. We could make it where it's $10 a gallon here. But it's going to be hard for people, like especially in rural areas like kind of where I am, Stillwater. We have the bus system, but it's based around OSU, the college.
Yeah.
And it would be hard for me to get around, at least with public transportation. And I don't know, for you, it probably wouldn't be any easier. You're in a suburb. And so I don't know if they have any public transportation around where you live either.
Well, I mean, nothing compared to what would it take? I mean, they would have to purchase hundreds of buses to even touch, you know, what we would need. And there's not even a system set up like that. You know, there are buses in the Oklahoma City area, but I mean, it's nothing compared to what you would actually need for, you know, 2.5 million people going to work every day. So, I mean, think about, okay, you know, put this in perspective. A calculator here. So my truck gets 14 miles to gallon. It's a typical SUV-ish type vehicle with a V8. What's the current gas? Is it $3? I can't change that. So we'll say its current average gas is $3.60 a gallon. The future price is 10 bucks a gallon. And average per week, I drive 25 miles a day, 5 days a week. So I'm going to say, in the weekends to and from everywhere, I'm going to say about average a tank a week. So we're going to say around 300 miles a week. So currently, my yearly gas bill at $3.60 a gallon, it's calculating as $4,000 a year. And the future yearly gas will be $11,000 a year. So $11,000 per year. Okay, so
it's $1,000 a month.
Yeah, $1,000 a month. I mean, your mortgage is that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's like adding another house or they're talking about it being, to the normal person, like 40% of your income on gas.
Yeah.
Okay, so lots of things. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's hard for me to believe that, you know, if oil keeps going up, I understand that gas is going to keep going up, but it would be hard for me to believe that the laws of supply and demand will actually get it to where it's $10 a gallon. I mean, in this article, it talks about parked planes and people not being able to go to Applebee's and Macy's and the Gap and the Best Buy. So if we keep, and truckers not being able to,
yeah,
I've already read an article about one truck business going out of, you know, having to shut down because they can't afford gas. It's a little hard for me to believe that gas is going to really get to $10 a gallon. Now, it might, I don't know, but just seems like
the thing market about forces. It is, I agree, but why would they don't care about your industry. I mean, think about that.
All, if people stop buying, then, you know, in general, if people stop buying, if airlines stop buying, if truck companies stop buying, if people stop going to the lake, and, you know, then it seems like those prices should just drop. And, you know, I live with a conspiracy theorist. My wife is one. And so it kind of makes me believe that there's actually like a superficial supply and demand cycle going on right now to where they're bumping up the demand. So it's inflated, which means prices go up. Like, I don't know if there's really that much demand out there to justify, you know, what is in your area? I think it's 374 here today.
Yeah, I think it's 379 or something like that.
Yeah. You know, maybe there is. I mean, I still pay it. I try not to drive as much, but I have to get where I have to go, you know?
Yeah.
So if I have to get there, I'm going
to
pay it.
Well, yeah. Eventually, it's going to get to where you can't afford to go to work. I mean, it makes more sense to stay home. Okay, right. Maybe not me and you. Maybe not someone that has a college degree. Yeah, you're going to break even, maybe. But what about the McDonald's employees? What about, you know, people who work part-time at the library? Those jobs will be gone because if you have to drive at all, you're eating up every single penny of a minimum wage. So that just tells you right there, your minimum wage is going to have to go up to even compensate for driving. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but this article even says that, you know, food is going to go up. The cost to transport it, and so your fast food McDonald's is gonna have to raise their prices, you know.
Yeah, and the more they raise their prices, the more you'd have to raise some your minimum wage. So it's basically it's all ridiculous. I mean, you just get more money and everything costs more, but everything gets paid more, so everybody gets, you know, it's more revenue going in, so the value of your dollar is gonna go down, and it's just it's a horrible cycle in my opinion. And it doesn't seem like you get raises at your job as fast as, you know,
as
everything starts going up.
Cost of living goes up.
Exactly.
Now, I could see you and I working from home more than, you know, the people that work at McDonald's can't work from home.
Yeah, because you're making food.
Right, but you could work from home, and I could theoretically work from home. So, and the article even says, you know, you'll see more people start working at home just because they can't afford to leave.
Yeah, but, and then you bring into the effect of, yeah, working from home is great, but how are you going to actually, I mean, in your mind, or in my mind at least, I'm thinking of the people who go to work every day, and you have a boss over you that's watching you do everything, so you're doing your thing. But, like, I mean, what kind of, I mean, I just see the majority of the workforce working from home. I just don't see that actually working and being productive, you know, as a whole. There's a reason why people go into work. There's a reason why there's a boss over you so he can give you direct feedback of what you're messing up or what you're doing good or whatever. So, but anyway, I mean, I don't know. I just see all these insane problems, you know, coming from, I don't know.
You know, what's even worse is I read an article in the Tulsa World today, and the government, and I think it's the Senate, has called in all the CEOs from all the big oil companies for a second time.
Yeah.
And they were, like, hammering them with questions, just trying to rake them, like, big time. And they're saying, you know, you guys are out there making billions of dollars in profits every quarter, while people in my constituency are suffering because they can't, you know, farmers can't go out and plow their fields or whatever. And they're just like, you know, we're victims here, you know, we're going to get taxed more and, you know, all this stuff. But each one of those guys, they asked them how much they made personally. And each one of those guys is compensated over $2 million each. Oh
my gosh.
One guy is compensated $12
million. $12
million. $12 million.
Well, you know, I mean,
and they claim, well, that's not
professional athletes are pretty compensated too, so.
Yeah, but you know, there's got to come, it's got to be for the greater good, I think. And I, you know, if you want to argue that professional athletes need to be paid less, I'll argue that. They're playing a game. They're playing a sport. Yeah. They don't need $6 million a year to go out and stay in shape.
Yeah.
But those games are, they're disposable income. You go to those games because you can afford it and you like it and, you know, that. And that's where their revenue comes from anyway. It's mostly from ticket prices and merchandising and stuff like that. But here, we're so ingrained with our oil and gasoline and everything that we have to have it. And there's just no getting around it. It's not like sports where you can choose not to go or to go or buy the shirt or not buy the shirt.
That's true. And that's,
I thought it was ridiculous.
That's, you know, that's the major difference. I mean, those guys are, you know, I wish I could say exactly why they're raising prices, which evidently not everybody knows exactly why they're raising prices. There's not a one reason other than there's not. Well, you know, America's a big machine and we are using however, you know, 100 million barrels of petroleum every day or whatever. And, you know, the thing about it is that they cut it a cent. It, you know, that literally cost them how many hundred million dollars.
Right.
But we don't give a crap, you know, what we cry because it's not a dollar cheaper. You know what I mean? So, I mean, they're looking at their bottom line. As a business, you're going to look at every single thing you can to cut costs, make more money. But I think there's something wrong with it.
Billions in profits.
Billions in profits. They said ExxonMobil is making more than what country was it? It was the gross domestic product of the 18th largest country in the world. Exxon is making more money in profit than their gross domestic product of the 18th largest country in the world. I mean, that's just one company.
Yeah.
So,
and that, I mean, that's like the American dream is building your company and, you know, making billions and billions of dollars. But this is like for the greater good, I think, that gas does not reach $10 a gallon.
Yeah.
Now, there was some good in the article. If gas did get to $10 a gallon, like we would start having more scientific jobs to get. Look for alternative fuels and let's see, what were some of the other ones?
Nuclear power and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have.
So there's some good in it.
Yeah. But they really kind of went into it really well. They'd have cars that were electric and everybody would be charging their cars. But then the problem with that is you need more electricity going. And then if you had more electricity rolling, you'd have, you know, you're going to have more coal and all that being burned and all this crazy stuff to make electricity and so it just would mess up a lot of stuff. I think it would just shift a lot of things. But I mean, they're talking about, like you said earlier, the airline travel. They would pretty much ground airline travel. So right. I mean, that's, you basically lose the ability to travel as a human being anywhere you want for a relatively low cost. You lose that ability. You are basically grounding everybody, period. You know, there's no more business travel. I mean, there's no way somebody's that important that they can't do a video conference, which maybe they spend too much on it anyway. Maybe this puts it in perspective. I don't know.
Well, fortunately, there is technology out there to where people don't have to travel as much in order to share information. You know, the GoToMeeting and WebEx and all that. I think those are awesome. But, you know, you'll also help the environment by not traveling and, you know, saving, burning up all the gas and CO2 that you would in a plane. And, you know, so.
True.
If it reaches $10 a gallon, I think it'll be rough for a long time. But, you know, the article kind of paints a hopeful picture that we'll remedy our dependency on foreign oil, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, my guess is what's happening to us now is what happened to Europe when Americans started driving. You know, because they have $10 a gallon now, and we're, you know, at $3 a gallon or whatever. But, you know, once the Chinese start driving, then it's just good because they're going to take up all the oil, all the world's oil.
Right.
There's only so much. So my guess is that what's happening to us now is what happened to the Europeans, you know, back whenever gas prices started going up over there.
When was that? Do you know?
I have no idea. No.
But, okay.
That's just my thought, you know.
Yeah. Well, so what happens to farmers and what happens to people like, you know, I don't know what happens to those people. They just stop. And then if nobody's growing anything, I mean, surely the government would step in and give people who grow crops for the United States something, you know,
because well, those guys
are struggling as it is.
Yeah, they really are. And my guess is that if it comes down to it, then the government will step in, take some of the profits through taxes or whatever it be, and subsidize some farms. Because we have to have those.
Yeah. You have to have meat. You have to have, you know, all the dairy.
Yeah, there's no way to get around that. We have to have it. And so, you know, I would imagine that the government would do something about it. Well, I have no idea where to look for European gas prices.
Well, I think we could probably talk about this forever, and it's kind of depressing in a way, but maybe it's actually good for our whole world. Like you said, you made just a good point that maybe the pollution aspect is worth it in and of itself. I mean, maybe. We have to eventually stop polluting our environment one day, and if we keep going the rate we're going, you know, we're just polluting it worse and worse every day. So, you know, maybe that is, you know, the, I don't know, grand solution is just make it stop, price ourselves out of the horrible pollution. So
yeah,
I don't know. Well, let's go on to something more fun to talk about.
Please.
So we're on this kick of iPhone killers. I found three pretty decent looking phones, and man, they're two of them are spitting image. One is very interesting.
It is slick.
Well, which one are you talking about at first?
My guess is you're talking about the Switch, the Google one.
That one is pretty slick, and it's almost weird. It's almost like it's not real the way they
have it. It may not be.
Yeah, there's been rumors of the Google phone for a while, and
yeah,
but man, it looks pretty slick. The Google phone, you have Samsung. That's pretty much a real phone, isn't it? That's what is that called? The Instinct. And then we have did you get that one?
Well, I got this one that you sent about this Google Switch, and it's the Google phone, and it's said to be the result of a collaboration with Samsung.
Yeah. That's okay. And then you also no, it's a different one. This one's actually looks like a real phone. It could be just
let me look that Instinct up.
You have the openmoco.com. It's looks like a $300 Linux powered iPhone killer. OpenMoco.
And I like that one.
Yeah, everything's open source on it. That's interesting. It's kind of right up your alley.
Yeah, OpenMoco has apparently been around for a while, and they're using it in some GPS devices now. But yeah, it's open. People can develop for it, and I'm not real big on the phone. I don't know. It doesn't strike me as all that well designed, but I like the fact that it's open source. It's weird. It looks like a big keychain or something.
Yeah.
I mean, with its open, is that the mic, I assume? The white space at the bottom, or do you think it's open there?
I don't know. I don't even know if that's a real picture. I mean, it looks, yeah. But All three of these, which one, let's see, which one was the one that had, that basically it didn't have, oh, that's the Google phone. It doesn't have any onboard storage. All your applications are served up over the network with new apps attached to your account via the web interface. So basically the Google phone is almost a screen that uses it basically instead of having any type of memory, it's always accessing the internet. So one, you're going to have to have minimum 3G to even touch, you know, your information. And two, that's kind of scary because all your information can be hacked. One, everything's supposed to be secure, but yeah, right. And if you can't get internet somewhere, you don't even have contacts. You don't have anything. You have a blank screen if you can't get your network. Which, if you can't get your cell phone network, your cell phone's pretty much worthless too, but you get the point.
What's the point of having contacts if you can't call them?
Exactly. So that's kind of interesting.
I'm kind of with you on that. Yeah, I don't know. It bugs me a little bit that everything would be up on the network, but maybe it only bugs me because I'm not used to it.
Yeah. And if it was fast, we wouldn't even care. And if it was reliable, we wouldn't care.
No, you and I are going to care because we can't get 3G around here.
Yeah.
But I did get the Instinct one. And I like the Instinct a little bit more than the Linux one.
Yeah.
But it looks a lot like LG's. LG released one that looked pretty much like this. And I heard it was really buggy.
Have you seen HTC's supposed iPhone killer?
Is it a new one or one that's already out?
Oh, it's already out. My boss actually has one. And he's like one of those guys that's not like real picky about cell phones, but he definitely isn't impressed with it. So, I mean, it does what he wants. He had a Trio for a while, and he liked the email, but he hated the phone. And he's gone through like four different phones in the last 5 months just because he wants one that just straight up works and is a good phone and keeps his stuff straight. He's had this one for the longest. But,
do you know? Is it the Touch?
Yes. Yep.
HTC have the big touch. Silver button on the bottom and then two little buttons on either
side.
It's
actually pretty small compared to an iPhone. And it's kind of got like the screen is not like an iPhone. The screen is kind of like an old like Palm Pilot. You know how it kind of had the matte film on it?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever.
Yeah, my brother has one.
Oh, does he like it?
Yeah, he really likes it. And I got to play it a little bit, and it's okay. You know, the touch isn't as responsive as I'd like it to be, but it's a Windows mobile device, which is, you know, Windows mobile sucks, but other than that, it's all right.
Well, supposedly this Samsung's Instinct has the haptic feedback, meaning it localized haptic feedback. Isn't that where you can kind of feel what's going on or whatever?
I guess is that what it'd be?
That talks about 3.1-inch touchscreen Instinct has a few things that iPhone doesn't, namely localized haptic feedback, GPS, microSD slot, three navigation keys. So at the bottom, you can go back or you can hit home or you can call from three actual hard keys that are always back, always home, and always talk. So no matter what you're doing, you can always hit the talk button, or you can hit the back button, or hit the home button. You know, the iPhone, you can only kind of go home, and then if it pops up, you answer the phone or whatever. So you kind of got to wait on it for a second. So that's interesting.
Yeah. That Samsung does look pretty nice.
Yeah, I think the more, you know, the iPhone starts to make sense, I think the more people will shift to that style, you know. Who was it? Nokia, who made the first kind of compact small phone that you could fit in your hand. You know, you had the bag phone and the big phone and the big Saved by the Bell Zach phone. And then Nokia made this little one that's fitting in the palm of your hand, and they've kind of stuck with that. You know, you've got a flip phone, but all is—it's just basically the same thing, but it flips into a smaller thing. But that's pretty much been the same until the iPhone. The iPhone totally did something different. So I think the more it gains popularity, the more exact replicas it'll have, and I think the other people will start bringing out some interesting things that the iPhone didn't think of.
Yeah, so, going to that style.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Apple puts out a good style product.
Yeah, they do.
So, can't blame anybody for trying to copy it.
All right.
Unless you do a crappy job, and then you really can.
Yeah, then you can blame them.
That's right.
They're just trying to stay afloat.
Let's do something a little different.
Okay.
Before we get into the indie label thing.
Yes.
You sent me this article about, we talked about your iPod last time.
Yeah.
You have to do a vertical hit.
Yeah.
Or what'd you call it?
Drop it on its head.
Vertical slam or something.
I had to knock some sense into it. Yeah.
Well, I think our tip for this week is, you know, how to either replace your cover or your battery or your hard drive in your iPod.
But the question I have before we start is, where do you get new ones? One.
So you didn't even read the article?
No, I did. You sent me? I did. I mean, but the internet, I mean, you don't just buy a hard drive off the, I mean, are you really going to buy a hard drive off the internet that somebody is taking off of theirs? They don't make them aftermarket.
Said a quick search on eBay for iPod, and this was a 20 gigger. So an iPod 20 gig parts revealed a lot of options. And this guy got, I guess, a case or a click wheel or something for $22.50.
Yeah.
Let me look that up.
And I didn't actually replace my click wheel. I just unplugged the battery. But I think it may be my click wheel going out because it messed up again after I fixed it. But it brought it back to life because I couldn't make it work, you know. For about 3 months, I've been turning off, and I can't revive it without hitting, like, restarting it, which is holding the middle button and the menu key until it restarts, and then it would lose all my you know, places in the podcast or where I was at in the, you know, kind of hold your place.
Right.
I would lose all that, and I would have to reboot it every time I start up. Now it's not even coming on at all. Well, I thought it died officially, and I touched it this morning, and it came on, and it said the battery was low, so I charged it on the way to work and put it on the Bose dock thing at work, and it worked all day, played music all day long, and then I took it off the dock to do something, and it turns its power off when you take it off the dock, and it wouldn't come back, so I got on the internet, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this sucker apart. So I get it popped apart, and I just unplug the battery from the little motherboard in there, and it came back to life and worked. And it worked until I got home just a while ago, and I can't get it back to respond. So I'm thinking, one, I know it works, but I'm just wondering if it's the touch bat or the click wheel that's messed up because it's not responding to me doing a hard reset anymore, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do about that.
Well, there are plenty of auctions on eBay for anywhere from a cent to, you know, 50 or 100 bucks, for depending on what you want to spend. Well, for parts.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I'd almost just do it for the experience. Yeah, I'd almost do it for the experience just so I could, you know, say, I mean, because you can go buy a new one for 400 bucks or, you know, jack with the one I got for, you know, yeah, 20 to 50.
20 bucks. Or whatever.
Yeah, and the good thing is I have a 30 gigabyte brand new one that Shelby's, that I actually bought her one of those $49 shuffles, and she likes it better than the other one. She runs with it. She just clips it on. She uses it for what she's going to use it for and doesn't use the other one at all. So she basically gave it to me. The only problem is it's a 30 gigabyte, and I've already got the 40 gigabyte that I have filled up, so I'm going to have to cut some stuff just to even make it fit.
Yeah.
But I'd rather just have my, you know, 2.5-year-old, you know, 4th generation white brick.
Or just buy you a hard drive for one of those things.
That's true. But I'm not so sure it's the hard drive, because the hard drive seems to be working. Well, no, I take that
upgrade
back.
Upgrade the hard drive on the 30 gig.
Oh, there you go. Just put a bigger hard drive in it.
Yeah, just put a bigger one in it, and you got it.
You think it'd be thicker?
I don't know. Are those standard hard drives? Are they standard, like 2.5s? Or?
No. They're a little bitty. You'd be surprised.
So they're like,
they're about the size of a business card. Probably about a stack of 30 business cards put together. If that, well, not 30, probably 20 business cards put together and smashed together. They're actually extremely thin. The bulk of the electronics is a motherboard screen and battery. So, I mean, I always thought it'd be just filled up with hard drive, but the hard drive is little.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it looks like it's a 1.8.
1.8 inches?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that tells you how small it is.
Yeah.
And they're getting even smaller. But it was interesting popping that baby open, for sure. Now I'm not scared to pop it open anymore. I'm going to open it up every day. I need to listen to music, pop it open.
Yeah.
Hit the kill switch and listen to some tunes.
There's an 80 gig you could get for right now. It's at $7.
Is it broken, I take it, or just the hard drive?
No, it's just the hard drive.
I wonder if I could put the 80 gig in mine.
Oh, good point.
Just over, you know, upgrade that bad boy.
Yeah. I don't know. Good point. Anyway, we'll have a link to this, how to take it apart.
How to dismantle your time bomb. Because iPods are all time bombs waiting to break. So if you want to invest in a $500 iPod, then do it. It will break in 2 to 3 years.
As will all Mac products.
But, I mean, think about it. Who wants to keep a Mac for longer than then? You want to be able to buy something, you know, in 2 years.
That's right.
You'll get bored with your little white machine, so.
Yeah, well.
And if you're like me, you want to buy stuff new all the time, so. It works
out
well.
That's how they make their money.
It works out well. Next up, we have this is something that Willie had talked about in a previous show. We kind of found the article. Indie, or also known as independent record labels, are combining to form a virtual fifth major record label, which kind of describe. What the difference is in a major? Do you know the difference in a major label and an indie label?
I don't. You're gonna have to describe it for me.
Well, your major labels have all the contracts with all the major, like, you know, areas. So you're not gonna see an independent label on a movie. Well, you might actually, but you're not generally gonna see them on big movies. You're not generally gonna see them on MTV. You're not going to see them on, you know, whatever, all the award shows. You're not going to see.
Is there any music on MTV anymore?
There are like, it's like 1 hour a day at like between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. or something. Yeah, you'd have to like TiVo it to see music videos. And that's what MTV2 was about until they figured out they couldn't make any money on that. So they just went to reality TV crap. On MTV2 now, so, and then they have like Headbangers Ball on Sunday, so that's all you have, so it's kind of lame. But anyway, major labels, they're the ones with the, you know, major backing of money. They, you know, that they're still doing record contracts that involve major money. They're still paying for, you know, major recordings, you know, $100,000 recordings. But they've got all the major avenues to sell more music, to perpetuate their business. if that makes sense. Independent labels don't have those avenues necessarily. Now, they may be ex major label guys who have started independent labels, so they have, you know, they have connections, but they don't have like contracts with whoever, you know what I'm saying? So basically what's happening with this article, kind of briefly describe what's going on with this fifth major label, but that's combined with indie labels.
It looks like labels from the United States, England, France, Norway, Japan, Brazil, Spain, New Zealand, Australia, and some other unnamed countries have already signed on to use their collective size. And the new licensing authority is called Merlin. So I guess your overall, your umbrella is going to be called Merlin.
Okay.
And it looks like if they all joined up together, then they would account for 29% of worldwide music sales and 80% of all new releases. And that would make them the largest single label in the world, ahead of the quote unquote big four, EMI, Warner, Universal, and Sony. But, you know, it says right here, but if Merlin isn't a traditional label, they neither have the content aggregator nor distributor, so it's not going to be just that easy to get stuff out.
Yeah, so each individual label will still have to do their own distribution and basically have to deal with getting the music out there, getting it recorded, getting it, you know, getting all the keeping up with how much that's getting played, your royalties, all that good stuff. All the individuals will still do that. But what's the benefit exactly?
It looks like it's providing all of these independent labels with a single point of contact for the distribution. Like if a movie or something wanted an independent label band, they could go to this one company. And they could have their pick from all this independent music, or if a music store wanted to play independent music, they could go to this Merlin.
Yeah,
and
shop for all the independent guys.
And then the independents wouldn't be competing with each other; they'd just be competing
with the other four.
Yeah,
it looks like possibly this is going to be able to make them get on the online, such as iTunes or Amazon. Or others that generally only, they have independent people in there because you can go through CD Baby and they can get your music on iTunes. But the problem with that is you're not getting paid anything. You're not getting paid hardly anything. So, I mean, an independent guy's maybe making, I don't know, it's not good. Maybe 10 cents, you know, or whatever on the dollar. Not even that, maybe. Probably less than that. So, yeah, it's getting pretty bad. So, I mean, you sell your record, but you're not really selling it. You're just making somebody else somewhere rich because they're selling a completely renewable thing, an MP3,
right.
And they're benefiting 90% of your intellectual property. So that seems kind of insane to me, but the power is where the people are, and I know I buy all of my music except the stuff I actually really want to keep. You know, I buy CDs of the good stuff, but all my other stuff I buy on iTunes because it's easy. I can browse and buy it and have it and put it on my iPod, and I'm good. So
without leaving the house.
Exactly. Well, I didn't spend any gas, my $10 gas, so.
That's right. Yeah, what's that going to do to, like, bands touring, you know?
That's a good... I think it'll be good. I mean, because the more power you have as an independent band, the more you have distribution, and the easier it is for an independent band who's making it on their own to get their name out there into the mass media, which is how most bands break. They get their name out on Leno. You know, they're on Leno one night and Saturday Night Live, and they're on this new commercial, and all this stuff happens because those major labels have all these connections to mass media. So if this fifth major label has that connection, you know, then it trickles up from your small label to maybe a subsidiary to Merlin, and they can get you in there too. I think it just helps everybody. So
yeah. Well, I know there's a lot of good music out there that I've never heard of, and you know, I know you're a lot more into it than I am, but
what it's yeah, hard to it, find because if you don't
it really is.
If you don't go to iTunes and search through the crap that they want you to see, you know, how are you going to know? I mean, all it is stuff that they want you to see. So if I click on a band I like and then they say, well, listeners also bought this. Did they really? I mean, or is this just another band you think I'll buy based on market research? You know what I'm saying? So, no. You know, they're persuading you in some way. And then the artist looks at it like, well, my record label is good at persuading people to buy my record. Whether it's what they want or not, I don't care as long as they buy it. So I want to go with the biggest, baddest dude on the block to persuade people to buy my record because they put my name, they put my record on the front page of iTunes because they're a big entity and they paid iTunes more money. You know what I'm saying? So Everything is kind of dictated by how much money is spent, how much, you know, marketing's out there, what movie was on that. Or a Grey's Anatomy, where you're like watching Grey's Anatomy and you're into it, and oh man, that song is awesome. I gotta find out what song that is. You know, well, that's, you know, brilliant. It's because somebody somewhere paid someone to use your music in a scene that worked out well. You know.
No.
So,
how often do you do that? How often do you see someone on TV and think, oh man, I need to go find out what that is?
I've done it like probably about 5 times, and each of them have been awesome finds. I did it with Amos Lee. I saw heard one of his songs on a movie, and I stopped the movie, I didn't stop the movie, but when the movie was done, I immediately looked for who that was and then went and found him on iTunes and bought their CD that night. And Amos Lee is probably one of my favorite bands right now, or I guess artists right now. So Amos Lee, Feist, who else? Snow Patrol. There's been several bands that I've looked just because I was like, man, what was that? That was awesome. I gotta remember that.
Yeah.
So
I know you're a big house fan. I'm a big house fan, but it seems like House, at least in season 2, did a really, really good job of like having really good music where it needed to be.
Yeah.
In order to kind of promote the music.
Yep.
There were several House episodes that I went either to House's website because they give all the information, or you know, I looked it up on the internet or whatever, and you know, they've had some really good music on.
Definitely, I think it's a brilliant. I think it's a brilliant marketing way, and you know, it's not like, hey, buy this CD. It's like putting it in context almost.
Right.
Hey, this song moves in some way. I think it's brilliant marketing, and I think I don't think it's intrusive at all. I think it's great. They're using an art form that you can buy to make an art form that they're, you know, doing. You know, TV shows are there, so they can make money off of advertising.
Yep.
That's the reason TV shows are there, and the better the TV show, the more they can shove advertising down your throat, and the better the TV show for me, the more I will stand them shoving crap down my throat to watch this good television show. You know, and actors like to act, you know, that they get that out of it. And, you know, they're making money. They're making a lot of money doing the show. But when it comes down to it, they're little monkeys dancing to sell products, to make someone else money. I mean, that's the only reason there's TV. It's not for the sheer joy of making people laugh or the sheer joy of showing you how a gunshot went through a metal car and then into somebody's brain, but wrapped around it and went through this gelatin deal. And you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's just to sell crap. So, you know, keep making good shows and you can keep wanting to sell me crap, man. Keep it up.
You're so jaded.
That's okay. Joke's on them because, you know, I actually like the crap they're putting out.
If we don't watch the commercials, it's like we're stealing TV.
I know. Thank God for the TiVo. And I shouldn't even say TiVo. That's like saying, do you want a Coke? Yeah, what kind? Dr. Pepper? You know, yep. TiVo, I'm sure TiVo loves the fact that everybody calls DVR TiVo, except for the fact that nobody's using it. I bet they're like, dang it. You know, because I don't know anybody. You're the only person I know that has a TiVo, and you don't even use your TiVo for a TiVo, do you?
That's right.
It's not even hooked up. You have it.
Nope.
But you don't use it. So, I mean, I have a Cox Cable DVR, their own little brand, so, and it works great. So,
yeah, I ended up rolling my own, and I like it.
So you have a media center, right?
Define media center.
A PC with Windows Vista on it?
I have a PC with XP on it. It doesn't actually have the program Media Center on it.
Okay.
I bought SnapStreams Beyond TV. And, you know, there are some free ones out there, but I liked the bundle that SnapStream was given. They gave me the dual capture card, which means I can watch one and record one or record two at the same time.
Okay.
Had to have that. So they gave me that and the remote and the software for like one price. And, you know, it's just easy that they everything came together. So,
wow.
And it works. So I like it.
So do you just turn your computer on when you want to DVR something, or is it on all the time, or what?
No, it's on all the time. That's how we watch TV now, is through kind of the computer.
Does it degrade the quality at all?
No. I haven't noticed.
The only reason I say that is I had a TV card one time, and I'm sure it was the crappiest one you could buy, you know, but it just seemed like the TV, it basically came up on my computer screen in a little window.
Right.
Through, you know, you could hit composite cable up to the back of your computer through this PCI card.
Right.
And it just seemed like it was kind of crappy, but I was wondering, does it translate pretty well to your TV?
Well, if I had a better TV, I could probably tell you better. I have a pretty old TV, and it only takes composite. So I had to get like an S-Video to composite converter or whatever.
Okay.
In order to get it to work. But honestly, I haven't noticed a difference. It records in MPEG-2 format.
Yeah.
And each hour is anywhere between a gig to 4 gigs, really. And you can actually set the quality of how it records.
Yeah.
The software allows you to do that. But what's cool about it is, you know, I have it set to roughly a gig is, or 1 hour of TV is like a gig or a gig and a half. And I've got it set to convert that to where, you know, after a couple of days, it'll convert it to a Windows media format and drop it down to like, you know, 300 megs or 500 megs per hour. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can, you know, it allows me to store like 40 or 50 hours on, you know, 80 gigs worth of hard drive space.
Yeah.
That includes the operating system and the software to run the TV and all that. So, I have more control over it too, because I can convert it or I can move it to my computer and then burn DVDs or, you know, anything like that. Whereas I don't think you can do that from your cable.
No, you can't. They've designed it unless you basically hook in a live feed.
Yeah.
I don't think you know what I'm saying? You'd have to do it in real time almost.
Right.
Now, do you have your media center networked wirelessly?
No, it's hardwired.
Oh, okay. But it is networked.
Yes.
So you could theoretically just pull it. It's just like a normal computer, kind of like a switched over from TV to your computer on your TV, and you could go to the network drive and play, you know, MP3 in your living room or something like that. Pretty easy, right?
Yeah, we actually do that. I install iTunes on it, and so I open up my home one, and I've shared the library, and so that one can see my library, and, you know, we play it through the TV, like when we're cleaning or, you know, just when we don't want the TV on, but we want some noise.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice, that's kind of, I wanted the flexibility to where, you know, we could play the music and, you know, it has a DVD player in it, so we can watch DVDs from through the computer, through Windows Media Player, whatever.
Now, are you aware of the capabilities of, like, a PlayStation 3? Like, Willie,
I know it's a Blu-ray DVD player.
Willie, he actually searched his network. We both have our PlayStation 3s wirelessly connected to the internet.
Right.
He searched the network for MP3s and pictures. And basically it found all the MP3s and pictures on his hard drive on his computer that he had shared and makes them accessible to the PlayStation. So he can play music over his PlayStation wirelessly from his computer. He can set the background where it randomly picks a picture. So he has a picture of his, you know, his little baby boy in like a bumblebee suit or something. And it is like, it is 40 inch high def, awesome picture. It's awesome. It really is. And he gets it to where it's random. So every time he turns his PlayStation on, it gives him a different random picture of the boy or whatever. And it is so slick. You know, sometimes you're like, oh, it's crappy looking. It looks so good on his like high def TV. And, you know, if he wants to turn the PlayStation on and, you know, just play some music, it's actually really fast. It's like click, 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 and he can, you know, start playing some music, you know. So that's pretty neat.
So it's like a media extender.
Yeah, it is. It's almost your media center. Now, in my opinion, if your PlayStation, if you could watch TV through the PlayStation somehow, like, I don't think it has a composite hookup or something, but... Right. Somehow, and you could use the PlayStation as a DVR. It has a hard drive. You could just say, hey, make 40 gigs of my 80 gig hard drive a DVR. It would be basically a media center.
Yeah.
It'd be, everything you'd want. But, you know, I don't think PlayStation 3 will be that necessarily because they didn't really build that in. But PlayStation 4 might be everything you'd ever want in, you know, a media center. So, could be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see where that goes with DVR becoming like so commonplace now. Just a year ago, like nobody had a DVR hardly, and now everybody's getting one. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see. I hadn't thought about that.
Definitely. All right.
Of course, well, I didn't know about PlayStation 3's capabilities either.
Well, the more I look at it, it's actually getting better. They just revamped their online store, and you can download demos of games and stuff. And it's a really nice looking deal. So,
cool.
Let's see, what else do we have?
We went from indie labels to DVR.
Yeah, I think we're gonna finish up with a little Traveler Blues. There's a new spot on www.travelerblues.blogspot.com, which is Mr. David Bond's his blog. It's we briefly touched on it last week, and I think we're gonna, every time there's gonna be an update, we're gonna talk a little bit about what's going on there. Chris, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the newest, we talked about the poll last time. Have you voted on the poll yet?
The best blues rock guitarist of the 60s.
From England, yeah.
From England. Oh, sorry. Yeah. British. I'm going to definitely have to say, I mean, for me, you're not getting much better than Clapton, but I prefer his style a little more. Yeah. But that's just me.
That's who I voted for, actually. And so far there have been 13 votes. There's 9 days left to vote as of recording. So whenever they get this, it may be over. But out of 13, 10 have been for Clapton, 2 have been for Jimmy Page, 1 has been for Peter Green, 0 for Keith Richards or Mick Taylor, well, which is a little surprising. But, you know, Keith Richards, he's... I don't know, he definitely deserves to be in that top five. But, yeah, so anyway, that's the poll. I did vote for Eric Clapton, and it made me feel like I knew at least a little bit something that the masses are agreeing with me.
Because, you know, 78%.
I don't know who the best British blues rock guitarist of the 60s is, but that would be my vote. But anyway, it's funny because Dave, I see that Dave posted this article on here, and he's linking to a non-zine article, which non-zine is a, Dave calls it an arts and culture rag. From Oklahoma City, and they cover, you know, music and arts and everything kind of creative that goes on in the Oklahoma City area. But what I think is funny about it is he says, from a local writer who seems to know his stuff, and here are the topics, and the writer has good taste, and yeah, if that's not enough for you, here's another article that you need to read by the same guy. And you click over to it, and you see who wrote it, and it's all Dave.
Yeah. No, apparently, in addition to his impressive writing skills, the writer has good taste as well. But yeah. No, you know, you got to remember it's Dave and Barrett, so maybe it was Barrett that wrote this.
Possibly. No, because you have to log in on. On it. This is Blogger, so you have to log in, and that's who it says posts it.
Dang it.
So he did it himself. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, but that's okay, but, Dave.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Have you heard any of these albums, the Black Keys or the Adolphus Bell that he reviews?
Well, I have not heard Adolphus Bell, but I have heard the Black Keys, and I actually heard it from at Dave's house when I was installing wood floors.
Okay,
and I have to admit... They're actually really good. Dave quotes them as his favorite band currently, which is, I would say that's a pretty big, I mean, Dave is kind of, he does listen to a lot of music, and I don't know if he's kind of a rabid fan like, you know, me and you and POD. I mean, they're always going to be my favorite no matter what, but I think that's a pretty big step for Dave. From all the music he has, all the stuff that he casually listens to say that the Black Keys are his favorite current band, that's pretty impressive.
We've seen all his music collection.
Yeah, it's huge, and it's massive, and it's growing daily. But thank you for the Oklahoma City Public Library System. that's a different topic altogether. Yeah. It's the Black Keys are different, but they're very they sound like the British rock kind of guitar sound, you know. They kind of almost sound half garage band, but just good, just nice, good riffs and rock. So I mean, they're good. I mean, some of his stuff's a little out there, but I do like the Black Keys, so.
Yeah. I didn't know if you caught on that we listened to it while we were laying floors or not.
Yeah. And
I didn't know if you knew.
Yeah. And we listened to, I listened to it when we were doing, you know, just some of the stuff that I was over there by myself. And I actually was in the same room listening. So.
Yeah. I just like you, I haven't heard the Adolphus Bell. He seems pretty impressive to do all those instruments by himself.
Yeah. I'd have to hear it to see if I was really impressed with it, because the dude would have to be doing some crazy stuff. Because, I mean, you can only do so much,
I think it's Black Keys.
Yeah, it's piqued my interest where I'm definitely going to check him out. And I know the Fred Jazz Odyssey, I've seen some videos of that stuff, and they are pretty smoking. I mean, and what's great for Dave is they're local. So, I think they're from Tulsa, right? Is that correct?
I believe they are originally. Yeah.
But man, they really are. They're good. So it'll be interesting to see what's up, what's coming up.
Yeah, I like this. You know, I'm with Dave. There's a lot of music that I don't know about, and I kind of come to you two guys to get my music fix.
Well, that's our homework for this week, is to check out the Black Keys, the Dolphus Bell, and the Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey.
And we'll have links to those two, to all this stuff. And so the Black Keys is their attack and release album, and then Adolphus Bell is his one-man band album. So good homework. I think I can handle that.
Definitely. That's the kind of homework I will actually do. Okay, well, I think we need to wrap up this show. We've rambled on enough for one night, I take it. I want to thank our sponsors, phones that resemble other phones. I think our previous sponsor, Long Pauses in Speech, is actually not going to be sponsoring our show this week. So that's a positive. They were kind of negative last week, but anyway,
A little bit.
Yeah,
you always hate to lose a sponsor, but you know, if we're gonna, I think that would be the one.
And I think. Yeah, our second sponsor will be gasoline. We appreciate you, Go Juice. Thank you very much. Even though you cost me more than I'd like, and
cost me $11,000. Next year,
I hope I make $11,000 next year. So, of course, Traveler Blues, the new blog from Mr. Dave Bond and Barrett Ship is Barrett Ship, I believe.
Yep.
Travelerblues.blogspot.com. Also, we need to be plugging our website, which is where you can find all of our show notes, which is www.solidroots.com, or you can find us on iTunes. If you're listening, you've already found us in some way or another, but definitely visit solidroots.com. And if you want to email us or drop us a line, you can email us at Chris?
R-I, just the letters R, the letter I, at solidroots.com.
Which stands for Random Inspirations, of course. So RI at solidroots.com, and we will be more than happy to talk to you. So if you want to talk with us about, you know, you need to tell us what we said wrong or tell us what we said right, or give us some ideas on future episodes, please write us.
And we're always looking to have people on just to talk and hang out with us. So
if you've got an internet connection and a microphone, you're more than welcome to be on the you're more than welcome to be on the show, as long as you're not stupid, because I will hang you up if you're stupid.
Hey, whatever happened to Mark?
I haven't.
Have you talked to him?
No, I haven't.
I sent an email and he never responded, so.
Yeah, I have his cell phone, so I'll probably need to end up talking with him. So, yeah. You know, somebody else, I think we're done, right?
Sure.
Okay.
So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening. See you next time.